Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. Now I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teink. We've described music on this show as unique in the past, but perhaps unique is too mild a term to describe what the group Rumbaroco performs. Here's just a short sample of the traditions that are combined in the group's music and performances. Venezuelan, American jazz, bluegrass, early European music, and even African drumming.
It all adds up to a fusion of instruments, styles, and interpretations that are really heard nowhere else. But it will be heard Saturday evening at the Zelazo Center as the opening performance of Early Music Now's 2015-16 season. Laurie Gutierrez is the group's founder. She joins us along with bassist Kirsten Lamb and cornetto player Nathaniel Cox. Gutierrez explains how the group came to be.
This is an idea that has been brewing for a long time, because as South Americans are always in the Eurocentric world, you know, represent everything that is from Europe, as it has been for a long time the standard for to measure everything from politics to arts to music, visual arts. And so there was a time where I was trying to figure out, how do we South Americans fit in, and what is our place in the 21st century? And then we're not in South America or Europe, now we're in the United States. And so how does it come all about in this country? So that was the first kind of philosophical question. And then you have wonderful people in Boston, all kind of musicians. We have, because of Berklee School of Music, you have all the jazz musicians. You have Harvard University with its ethnomusicology. And then you have very strong early music world there. And so in the case of my colleague here, Nathaniel, he is an expert on early music. He went to Europe to study early music, and now he just recently moved back. And I immediately said, well, this is the sound, the cornetto is a sound that really fits into the what we're looking for. Because when we are playing early music instruments, like the guitar, even the viola da gamba, they can be rather soft instruments. And when we are adding the Latin percussion, then we have a balance problem. And the cornetto helps not to have that kind of problem. Then we have people like Kirsten, who has gone to Oberlin, who plays right now with all kind of groups between jazz and bluegrass, etc. But she also has done early music. And so we can, the three of us, bridge that gap between popular music represented in jazz. Then we have the European represented in Nathaniel. And I am the South American trying to figure out how, especially Spanish and South American music from the past, can be recreated in the 21st century.
Now, Nathaniel, the cornetto is, technically, it's a brass instrument, right?
Well, that's an interesting question. There are many people who would categorize it as a brass instrument.
Because of the mouthpiece?
Yeah, but I think categorizing instruments as brass or woodwinds is really only meaningful with our modern instruments. Looking back on the instruments that existed in the 16th and 17th centuries, this distinction is not so important as other distinctions, such as between wind instruments and string instruments, or between loud instruments and soft instruments. So the cornetto is unique in that the mouthpiece is similar to a trumpet or a trombone. It's a lip-vibrated mouthpiece, but the instrument itself is made of wood, and it has finger holes like a recorder or an oboe. So it's kind of a mixture of these two techniques, the tone production of a brass instrument, but the actual instrument construction and finger technique of a woodwind instrument.
And I have to say, it's a gorgeous sound. I love the cornetto.
It's absolutely unique. It has a bit of a brassy sound, but also it's much more mellow, it's much more flexible. And as Lowry was saying, it's capable of coming up in volume to match the percussion, but it's also capable of playing very quietly and subtly to match with the viola da gamba and the guitars. So as Lowry said, I think it's a very good mix for this ensemble.
It reminds me somewhat in terms of timbre of the duduk, the Middle Eastern instrument, mm-hmm. which is sort of like an oboe d'amore, kind of, sort of. But, you know, and the cornetto has just a little more piercing to me, to my ear. It's just there's a little more punch.
Yeah, I've also I've made the exact same comparison in my mind. When I was starting out, I was looking for inspiration of what I wanted my instrument to sound like. And I was listening to the duduk and I thought, like, oh, can I emulate this sound? But I think ultimately, they are both instruments that are trying to emulate the sound of the human voice. And I think the power of the duduk, when we listen to it, is this kind of yearning, crying sound that is just immediately recognizable because we recognize it as a human characteristic. And I think the cornetto also approaches this. It has that element of this human voice. It can cry and it can sing in a way that
and
a
moan
lot of instruments.
And,
exactly, yeah,
yeah. All of those things. And Kirsten, for you, having this wonderful background of all of the American musics, you've got bluegrass and jazz, as well as early music from the European tradition. How did you find your way here?
I think a lot of it had to do with just playing the double bass, because the bass is so versatile, and so it can kind of find its way in a lot of different styles of music. I originally started playing classical and folk music just growing up. My parents are both musicians. They're both early music musicians. So playing with them, playing with their friends, playing in the folk scene where we lived. And so that kind of just paved the way for studying music more formally, and then getting more into jazz and improvisation, studying ethnomusicology, studying, you know, contemporary music. So just kind of finding ways that the bass can fit into all these different styles. It's just a good match for being curious about a lot of different styles.
Right, and exploring all of these different styles.
Sure.
And different ways, because I imagine, like the cornetto, and you're a guitar player, Laura,
I'm
right?
Actually a viola da gamba.
You're the gamba player.
And yeah. I play some guitar.
Okay.
I wouldn't call myself the guitar player, but that's how I actually did start.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. If you're Venezuelan, that's the first instrument that you get in your hands. This is an interpretation of the guitar. It has four strings. And there's one of the interpretations, because we also have another instrument which we'll have in the concert. It's called bandola. And if there are any Venezuelans in Wisconsin, you know, if they hear the word bandola, they'll know what it is. But this is a very interesting instrument that has the tone that reminds us of an oud. And that's where the ancestors of, you know, are calling into the Arabic music. And we bring some of that flavor in the very first two songs, and you can that you have in the CD, that we're going to be Morena and Las Mañanas. I also play a little bit of Renaissance guitar, because it's tuned in the same intervals as the cuatro, just one tone lower. But for myself, not to go crazy, I just brought it up, which would have been something that Renaissance Baroque instruments would do. Later on, there are standards tuning, but people tune to
whatever they need.
They need it.
Yeah,
and I think that's a very important aesthetic concept that we need to keep in mind when we're doing early music. That when people publish music, it used to be, especially in Italian, say ogni sorti di instrumenti, trying to say, you know, this can be played in any instrument, because whatever you had at home, that's what you were going to use. Well, now we have at home, you know, the chalumeau, we have the cornetto, and they are beautiful sounds that I don't see why we should just, you know, keep within certain time period. And so we bring them into the table as instruments that can be used to bring certain kind of colors. But we do have a real quattro player in the ensemble, meaning that he's a virtuoso, and he will be
he will show it.
Then we also have a bandola player, and one of the interesting pieces that we have in the program is called the Fandango, and this is an 18th century piece, and we could talk for a long time about the origins of the Fandango and all of that. But what we do in this concert is that we present the Fandango, which has a chord progression similar to a Venezuelan genre called joropo, and this particular one is called pajarillo. The pajarillo is determined by the tonality, whether it's major or minor, but also how the bass is played. Uh-huh. And so in this fandango, we go from the 18th century piece, and then we introduce the joropo, the Venezuelan genre, and we have the bandola player, who is also a virtuoso, showing what can be done with that instrument. He improvises, begins improvising in an Arabic sounding way, and then he finds his way to the joropo, because also for us the joropo has its ancestors. No, it's a wonderful mix of three continents. We have the European chord in the joropo, and we have the maracas, which is the indigenous addition, and we have the cajon or drums that will be represent the African influence, and then we have our own very own instrument called bandola, which only exists in Venezuela and Colombia in the plains. It is the cowboy zone, and so you won't find this instrument any other way in any other place in the world.
Things I love about early music is that it allows for this, that it was that kind of fusion even then, even in the European
Absolutely.
Tradition.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about that where, you know, it's whatever instruments you had on hand, whatever voices you had to sing. Things got written down, but it's not necessarily definitive. It's just like, here's a suggestion of how.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's I think, a very astute observation. And I think one of the things that makes this group interesting is this common idea of spontaneous music that exists in early music and also exists in numerous folk traditions, including all of this traditional music from South America. And this is in stark contrast with the classical canon, this 19th century classical music that is very is so specific and descriptive about what it is and what it has to be, who's playing what. All of the dynamics are written in, all of the interpretation, and it's very controlled in what it is. Whereas the further you go back in time, the more freedom you have to substitute instruments, to come up with unique interpretations. I think different people would have different ways of performing the same piece based on where they were performing, who they had to perform, what mood they were in that day. So you really can't speak of the piece as being one thing. That's one of the interesting things about playing with this group, is that each piece we do is completely different every time we do it. We have
which is
different
good
people.
And bad.
sometimes we're amplified, sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're playing in a house, sometimes we're playing in a stadium. Sometimes we just have the cornetto and a bass. Sometimes we have electric bass. Sometimes it's completely unpredictable, and therefore everything is fresh. And that's something that's really wonderful. And that's something that I feel connects. It really resonates between early music and the Latin American
and the other folk traditions.
Yeah.
And I was going to say it also connects with the audience in a way. It allows that freedom of reaction from the audience.
Right. Because the audience enjoys the music only as much as we are enjoying it. And when you see us performing, where everyone is watching each other because we take turns on improvising or giving clues on what is happening. And the audience just loves that because they feel like they are being participants of the music making. And in fact, just a little warning, we do make the audience become part of the music making.
Oh, good.
Towards the end of the concert, while people have been beating their foot down, you know, shaking their shoulders or moving around, just ready to jump out of the chair, we do invite them briefly to join us in one or two pieces. We'll see. It depends how the audience reacts.
Well, I can't thank you enough for stopping by and talking with us. So looking forward to the concert. Thank you for being here for the first time, and I hope this is the first of many times.
Thank you.
It was
very
our
much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Lowry Gutierrez, Kirsten Lamb, and Nathaniel Cox are three of the members of the Latin Baroque fusion ensemble, Rum Barroco.
They'll play Saturday afternoon at the Zelazo Center on the UWM campus. There's more information about them, plus about early music now at WUWM.com.